Today on Inside Utah Politics, Planned Parenthood of Utah scoring a win against the Trump administration. Why they say the Big Beautiful Bill is targeting Planned Parenthood in a new lawsuit. Plus, a big shakeup at the IRS. Our panel weighs in on the political impact of churches now allowed to endorse candidates for public office. And an AI scam impersonates the Secretary of State. Who was targeted and how Congress is reacting?
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrens.
Well, thanks for joining us. I am Lindsay Ehrens. Let's go inside Utah politics. A federal judge blocked a part of the Big Beautiful Bill thanks to a lawsuit from the Planned Parenthood Association of Utah and others. Now, the group sued, claiming the bill targets them by preventing their patients from using Medicaid to cover appointments. Now, Planned Parenthood says it'll stop patients from getting life-saving care, while supporters of the bill have called this an activist decision. Well, I'm joined today by Shireen Gourbani. She's the interim president of Planned Parenthood Association of Utah. Shireen, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
So let's dive right in. Why do you believe this provision in the Big Beautiful Bill is unconstitutional?
Yes. So we fundamentally believe that people should be able to access care where they want to. If they have Medicaid, they have a right to be able to exercise that care, to go get that care, and have that covered by Medicaid. And this is, frankly, a blatant attack on Planned Parenthood and, most importantly, on our patients.
The attack part is one thing your lawsuit alleges, basically alleging that you are being singled out.
Yes.
Can you describe how you believe that's happening?
Yeah, we believe that this is happening, and there's, I would say, plenty of blowback from politicians who want to continue to make healthcare a political issue. But these politicians are saying, oh, well, we can go after Planned Parenthood. They're very blatantly saying that this is an attack on Planned Parenthood in their own words.
But is it not the role of Congress, and the Constitution provides for the role of Congress to fund things? It has the power of the purse, if you will, right? So it is their decision, is it not, to what they fund and what they don't?
Sure. I guess I would say this. What I think is critical for people to understand is the Trump administration and their backers in Congress, which for us includes every single one of our federal representatives in the House and in the Senate, were very happy to tell patients exactly where they could get their care. And this is something that it's a prolonged attack that they have had on trying to minimize people's access to care, reduce access to care, make it more expensive to get care in this country. And frankly, we know that this effort makes our entire healthcare system more expensive. So if they have the responsibility of the purse, if they're trying to be judicious with the dollars that are spent, you would think that they would be happy to have us continue to provide high-quality, low-cost care to individuals who absolutely rely on us for that.
But the issue is around abortion, right? So what you're saying here is that because Planned Parenthood provides abortions for people in states where it is legal and provides that care, then the federal government is saying, we don't want federal dollars to go to an organization like this.
Yeah, so our representatives should be smart enough to know that the dollars that we're talking about in Medicaid, when we're talking about Title 10, which we recently lost. And when I say we, what I really mean is 26,000 Utahns who relied on that, on those dollars for free and low-cost care. Those are the people who have been harmed. And really what's important to understand here is that those dollars were never able to be used for abortion care. Those dollars go to family planning services. So all of those individuals, our representatives in Congress, are completely fine with cancers going undetected, with STIs going untreated, with people unable to access birth control that they need to plan their lives and their futures. That's what our politicians have decided to say. This honestly really isn't a political issue. They've chosen to make it one by stripping away people's rights.
I want to take a look at a tweet from Senator Mike Lee, because he kind of posted a diatribe, if you will, of ways he was pushing back mostly on your legal claims in the lawsuit. And he went so far as to call for the judge that issued this federal ruling to pause this provision to be impeached. So Lee's tweet says, quote, in part, if any part of the Constitution somehow prohibits Congress from withdrawing federal funding from an entity like Planned Parenthood, I'm not familiar with that provision. So basically, he argues you're not being singled out, that it's, again, the job of Congress to control the purse strings, and that this provision has nothing to do with your free speech or your free speech as an organization. What do you make of his comments?
I just really have to say, Senator Mike Lee seems to be having a hard time with the Constitution these days. So there are many things that are happening that I would say are blatantly illegal that are happening all around this country right now. So I really don't trust his opinion on this, and I certainly understand that he is also not a healthcare provider. So he doesn't understand how essential Planned Parenthood is to the healthcare fabric of this state and to this nation.
Where do you think this lawsuit goes from here? We know that this provision is paused for the next 2 weeks, but what happens after that?
Yeah, so what will happen after this is in the next 2 weeks, we anticipate that there will be another hearing where we are seeking a preliminary injunction. At that stage, we'll have a sense of kind of which direction this goes. Will this be kicked up to a higher court system, or will we go through the process at this level of court?
Okay, so right now it's in a federal court, but you're saying, will it go up to the Supreme Court?
It may.
Okay, interesting. I mean, just talk to me about this provision that is in the Big Beautiful Bill. For people who didn't follow it as closely as you and I, what does the provision do?
Yeah, so what the provision does is it says that individuals who use Medicaid as their insurance, and I want to be crystal clear, as of right now, because of our temporary restraining order, if you have Medicaid and you are seeking care at Planned Parenthood, we are able to see Medicaid patients because a judge has agreed with us that this is an illegal attack. But that aside, what it did is say that patients who use Medicaid as their insurance are not able to use that insurance at a Planned Parenthood. So they could still come as self-pay in some cases. They may be, if others have, you know, other forms of insurance, they're still able to use their insurance at a Planned Parenthood. We have many options and we take many, many forms of insurance. But what it said specifically was that Medicaid patients wouldn't be able to. What this is the tip of the iceberg in the unraveling of our public health safety nets across this entire country. I'm sure you've been reporting on the thousands, tens of thousands, I think estimates are about 150,000 Utahns are poised to lose Medicaid coverage with this budget reconciliation bill. I don't think there's anything big or beautiful about that other than the number of people who will go uninsured.
Interesting. So what do you want people to know right now if they're kind of hearing this for the first time? And maybe they see it like you, like it's an attack on Planned Parenthood. And maybe there are others who say, no, Congress has the ability to decide who it wants to fund.
Yeah. So what I think people need to understand is that this is an attack on your rights. And there are many ways that our rights are under attack in this country right now. When we start to cede ground here and there, what it creates is an environment where it is harder to get health care, where access is restricted. We're seeing, as a result of this bill, there are hundreds of hospitals, I think three or four here in Utah, that are identified that are likely to close. We already know that community health centers are seeing less funding. County health departments are receiving less resources to help test and track STIs. This is an administration, and their backers in Congress are hell-bent on making sure that health care is less accessible and it's more expensive. And that should matter to every single Utahn, no matter how you feel about Planned Parenthood.
How concerned are you about the ruling in this? Do you think it'll go your way? I mean, that's probably a dumb question, because obviously you think it'll go your way, but some are arguing you don't have a case here. In fact, Senator Lee is arguing that. He's saying you don't have a legal case here, and we even want this judge to be impeached because we believe, again, it's judicial activism.
Yep, so I really will not take feedback from Senator Lee on what he considers judicial activism, considering we have a Republican supermajority on the Supreme Court at this stage.
Okay, interesting. Shereen Gourbani, we really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much. Is there anything else you want to add to this that I didn't ask you?
I just want to make sure that people understand our doors are still open. We are here to provide the essential health care that you need. We have clinics in Ogden, in Orem, and then four in the Salt Lake Valley, but we also provide access to birth control and some other services via telehealth.
I should ask you, how many Medicaid patients do you serve, maybe even just here in Utah?
Yeah, so it's about 2,000 patients for us. It runs between 3 and 6% of our budget. But I think it's important to say that for us, any patient who's denied access to care because politicians have decided to make this a political issue as opposed to an issue of care is not okay with us. We won't stand for it.
We'll leave it there. Thank you so much for your thoughts today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And best of luck in everything. All right, well, still ahead here on Inside Utah Politics. Utah House Speaker Mike Schultz is speaking out for a doctor accused of fraud. Our panel weighs in on the political implications after the break.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrens.
And welcome back to Inside Utah Politics. It has been a busy week in both national and local politics, so our panel here to break it all down. Rusty Cannon is the president and chief advocacy officer for the Utah Credit Union Association. And Taylor Morgan is with Morgan & May Public Affairs. Gentlemen, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, let's dive right in, shall we? First topic I wanted to hit today was our Utah House Speaker. Mike Schultz did some rallying this week, backing a doctor who was facing some federal charges over COVID-19 vaccines. This doctor is accused of discarding vaccines. He's accused of giving saline shots to minors instead of the vaccine, and then faking people's vaccine cards, signing them when they didn't actually get the shot. Now, the trial's ongoing. He's still just accused of these charges, has not been convicted. Rusty, let me start with you. What do you make of the speaker and other Republican lawmakers who joined support of this doctor, Michael Kirkmore?
Yeah, it's a bold move, to put it kindly. I think there are two different issues at play. Number one, what the doctor is accused of, those types of fraud, that's pretty hard to defend that. If you look at the comments that they made at the event, I think it's really more about the pent-up anger still about the restrictions that were in place under COVID. As we look back now a few years later, I think you kind of get a different viewpoint of, we really did that? Mm-hmm. You know, those types of things that people were very frustrated with, maybe they were trying to tap into that. I think for a lot of people, this issue has kind of gone to bed. I was a little bit surprised by it. It was a pretty bold move.
Taylor, you are a campaign consultant. I mean, if you were advising Mike Schultz here, would you have told him to go support this guy? Or do candidates kind of, or not even candidates, but just elected officials, they have minds of their own. They can choose who they support.
I think Speaker Schultz here is marching to the beat of his own drum. I don't think anyone who is good at their job would advise him for political purposes to show up at this rally and say what he did in order to score political points, you know, to help support a run for governor in the future. And we all know it's no secret that Speaker Schultz is eyeing a run for governor, and that could be a very crowded field. Say Jason Chaffetz, Lieutenant Governor Dieter Henderson. These are other names that are in this field, a crowded field. If Speaker Schultz is trying to carve out some space, perhaps to the right of those other candidates, this is not the right way to do it. This is not the audience that will be voting. Utahns are just not tracking this issue in this way. I'm frankly, from a political perspective, I'm a little bit disappointed that he chose to attend this rally and say what he did. Even though I do agree with his frustrations over COVID, I still do not think supporting this doctor who committed fraud, allegedly, who allegedly destroyed government property in this way, pretty egregious.
Yeah.
I don't think a good move.
Rusty, you're saying he showed up because of this pent-up anger.
Yeah.
And Taylor, you're saying, well, he's maybe trying to score some political points here. I mean, is it both? Is it either? Is he?
Well, I think anybody that knows the Speaker of the House well, you know how genuine he is. He is not afraid to express his feelings, and he does it in a very direct way. I think maybe that, in my opinion, was part of it. And I think a lot of people appreciate that, that if there's something you want to say, you go and say it, and you're not afraid of it.
Yeah,
I
agree
a lot
with
of
that. I think perhaps him showing up at that rally and saying what he did was against political advice in with the eye to run for governor. I think he showed up and said what he said because he believed it, mm-hmm. not just to score some points. Mm. I still disagree with it, but I do think he was authentic.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. We'll have to see how it all plays out. I want to switch to a national topic that has a lot of local implications, and that is this week, the IRS has now said that churches can endorse political candidates from the pulpit, essentially, without losing their tax-exempt status. Taylor, let me start with you on this one. Can you see the predominant faith here, Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints here in Utah, actually endorsing a candidate from the pulpit?
No, I don't see that at all. I think the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has always been a little bit more nuanced in how they approach candidate and campaign politics. We have seen in the past several times that Utah's predominant church has made statements encouraging participation by voters, by members of their faith in elections. I think that's the path they will continue to take. Now, we know here in Utah there are ways that candidates and campaigns can imply membership in Utah's most predominant religion. You know, as a fifth generation Utahan myself, I'm familiar with that kind of language.
Good job.
Look for that language, everyone. When you hear a candidate say that, that's what they're trying to do.
And informed by my pioneer ancestry, you know, Utah voters do not like to be told how to vote or for whom to vote by their religious leaders. They like the implied values, the implied shared faith and viewpoints, but don't tell Utah voters how to vote or you will lose them.
Rusty, I mean, do you see this changing anything here in Utah?
No, I don't think so. I think the one avenue that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints clearly wants to go down and always has gone down is unifying and attracting more members, more faith, more those types of things. There is no easier way to blow that up than to bring politics into it, yeah. So I don't see that ever happening.
Take us outside, though, of the predominant faith here in Utah. In the South, there are evangelical churches and just really fervent religious people down there as well. What do you see changing in that regard, if anything?
I think that is exactly, we know that is the basis of this new ruling that has impacted the ability of churches to endorse candidates, the decision by the IRS there through the courts. That is a product of what happened in Texas and in other Southern states. I do believe that those churches will take a much more explicit and direct position when it comes to endorsing and supporting candidates and campaigns. Now, the future here becomes really interesting because what about other 501c3 tax-exempt public charities? Churches are just one kind of 501c3. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of other public charities and organizations that can offer tax benefits to donors, but in the past have not been able to endorse candidates or campaigns. Could that change as well?
And Rusty, if and when those things start opening up, these churches maybe elsewhere start endorsing people, what does that do to the political landscape, maybe nationally?
Well, I think even on a national basis, that can open up many different avenues for candidates to pursue. If that's something that they feel like helps their campaign, I think you could see candidates aggressively going after that type of...
Is there money now involved? Do these candidates now pay churches to do this?
Well, I have no idea if it would get to that extent, but any way that a candidate, and Taylor would certainly know this in the work that he does, any candidate that can open up more arena for them in front of voters, whether it's an organization like that or other, they'll take it. And so, yeah, very well could open a whole new can of worms. I don't know if that's the right analogy.
Do you see us, Taylor, having to put some finance regulations around this in any way?
Absolutely. This is a real unknown. We're going down a path, really uncharted territory here when it comes to 501c3 public charities, even if it's only churches for now. But the ability to raise funds from, say, congregants through tax-deductible donations from church members to then give directly to candidates and campaigns, that's huge.
Yeah, that would be game-changing.
That is a lot of money. It could be game-changing. Yeah. And nationally, it becomes very interesting. I still stand by what I said earlier about Utah. Here in Utah, Utah voters like a degree of separation between their secular public participation and their religious faith. Those lines are often blurred, and I think we all recognize that. But what we saw happen with Democratic gubernatorial candidate Brian King in the last election last year, he was very explicit about his faith. He told voters directly to vote for him because of his faith. That backfired. Voters didn't like that, and he performed more poorly than any other recent Democratic candidate for governor because of it.
Lots to watch there. We will continue to watch it for sure. Finally here, I want to touch on something our Utah Senator John Curtis spoke out about. That was the pause of weapons to Ukraine, a weapons shipment to Ukraine by Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth. There was reporting this week that Hegseth did not inform the White House that that pause had happened, and Trump didn't know about it. There was kind of a miscommunication there. Curtis came out and said, I would like to investigate. I'd like to find out why that shipment was paused. Rusty, what do you make of the senator's comments?
Well, I think the senator's onto something. I think there's a little bit more to this. It could be problematic for some in the administration if that's something that they did. I think you could have some jobs at risk. I don't think it gets to Hegseth at risk. That's just my personal opinion. But it'll be interesting to see if this continues to fester or if it blows over. I think the administration wants it to blow over. But this was a pretty big misstep, especially for an administration like President Trump's. I can't imagine how he reacted to this when he found out, but I would love to read the book someday.
You know, someone was getting a wrist slap behind the scenes.
I think it was more than that.
Yeah.
An aggressive signal a few text messages.
Well, that was going to be my next question, Taylor. Is this is not the first misstep from Pete Hegseth. We also had Signalgate, right, a few months ago, where he accidentally included a journalist in a Signal chat about attack plans. Does this put him at risk at all with the administration?
I don't think it puts him at risk. I agree with Rusty that it's certainly problematic. I think it's symptomatic of maybe bigger, broader issues in the administration. Look, I think ultimately Pete Hegseth is and will be known for communication issues and problems with the way that he interfaces directly with the administration. I think the fact that we know about it and the fact that Senator John Curtis is speaking up about it, that's all really positive. I think it's a good thing. Like Rusty said, he's on to something. I think that as a Utahn, I'm really encouraged to have a senator who shares just my personally my conservative values, but also isn't afraid to stand up to the current administration, to call out problems when and where they exist, and to demand answers. That's what Senator Curtis is doing, and I'm happy about that.
We will have to see if we get any more information on what happened behind the scenes there and any wrist slapping that happened. Rusty Cannon, Taylor Morgan, thank you both for your insights today. We very much appreciate it. Well, still ahead here on Inside Utah Politics, dignitaries and members of Congress targeted by an AI scam, how Washington is reacting to the threat. Stay with us. The State Department is warning that someone is posing as Secretary of State Marco Rubio. Now, the department says the AI-powered scam messages were unsuccessful, but lawmakers stress this is just the latest example of why Congress needs to pass AI regulations. Washington correspondent Jesse Tenure reports.
The State Department, of course, is aware of this incident.
The State Department is investigating who's responsible for using artificial intelligence to impersonate Secretary of State Marco Rubio. Scam messages tried to contact a U.S. senator, a governor, and several foreign officials.
The department takes seriously its responsibility to safeguard its information.
But spokesperson Tammy Bruce did open her briefing Tuesday with a joke.
In my own voice, not AI. Not that you have some questions about that.
Reporters did, but Bruce said she couldn't answer them.
For security reasons, we do not have any further details.
There's still no agreement here in Washington on the best ways to police AI. Allies of President Trump tried to include a provision in his sweeping budget bill to restrict states from regulating the technology, but lawmakers ultimately removed it.
I was very pleased.
Tennessee Republican Senator Marsha Blackburn led the push to remove that provision because she said states are stepping up while Congress stalls.
And now we should step forward with the proper framework, the proper proposals to protect people in the virtual space.
Both Republicans and Democrats in Congress support regulating AI at the federal level, but big tech opposes their efforts. In Washington, I'm Jesse Tenor.
Well, that's going to do it for today's Inside Utah Politics. Don't forget, if you have any local political stories you'd like to see, make sure to reach out. You can email insideutahpolitics@abc4.com. Also, I'm on social media, X, Blue Sky, Instagram, Threads. Just search for Lindsay on Air, and Lindsay is spelled with an A. You can also find our show online in podcast form. Wherever you podcast, just search for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz. And, of course, if you are looking for more national political coverage, check out the new show from our NextStar national network, Political Power Ranker. Our national political director and the head of Emerson College Polling look at who's up and who's down in the world of politics based on the data. Now, we carry that for you on our free streaming app, our News for Utah Plus app. You can download that on Roku, Amazon Fire TV, and Apple TV. Well, thanks for being with us, everyone. We will see you next week.